have not always had the best of relationships with the Department of Rehab Services. There is no secret to this. Under Mr. Kilberry's direction, I will be quite candid, I did not feel like blindness was a priority in any way, shape, or form. I didn't get the impression that we were going to get equal services. The venue of choice was anything that would provide generic services to all disabilities. The problem with that is not all disabilities need cane travel, not all disabilities need speech output, and not all disabilities are served by learning Braille. I'm pleased to say that the new interim director, Chris Smith, has taken a totally different tack with us. In her first or second week of working as the interim director, she spent an hour on the phone with me. The level of access that we have is unprecedented at this point, and she has done a number of things that I think are very encouraging. Now, the lady who's, Chris could not join us today. We have with us Betty Odom Davis, and I want to tell you that even when Rob Kilberry was in charge, we mostly could get what we should be getting, I think because Betty did what it took to get it done. She might have not made an issue of it, but we did get what people were entitled to get done. And I think sometimes she did it despite her director. Now, that's my opinion. She may or may not agree with me, but I think that's how we got it done. I have asked Betty to come and tell us about the new initiatives, to talk with us about what's already been done, what's in the works, and what she sees as the path for the Bureau of Blind Services. She is the director of the Bureau of Blind Services, so let's give her a hand. Thank you for joining us, Betty.
Good afternoon. It's really great to be here, and as Patty said, there's a lot of different things that's going on now internal to the Division of Rehabilitation Services. And I think that change is always good, and particularly when the change is good. So it's a good thing, and as Patty has said, it was quite difficult to try to get some of the initiatives through that we all knew needed to be done. And I think one of the main things that I am so pleased about, as Patty mentioned, is that we have an interim director. Her name is Christine Smith, and she likes to be called Chris. And we all refer to her as Chris. And Chris is very involved and has been involved in rehabilitation services since about 20 to 25 years now. She started out as a rehabilitation counselor, and as she worked her way up the chain, she continued to stay in touch with people with disabilities. And I find that it is so much easier to work with Chris. She has a total access policy, and it has just made things a lot easier for us in blind rehab. The other thing is that we have a new secretary. Her name is Secretary Michelle Sattler. I don't know if any of you are familiar with her. She is also a very dedicated woman. When we meet with Ms. Sattler, she always says that her main philosophy is that we should be demonstrating a culture of caring. And the way to do that primarily is by offering to people in the state the type of high-quality services that they need and deserve. So that's her major focus. And I think with these two women at the helm, we're going to see things moving forward. And I'm sure you want me to tell you a little bit about what we have done and where as I see us going. And I'm certainly going to leave some time for questions because, as I always said, you could talk for a day or two and never address some of the issues that might be on your audience's mind. So I really would like to have an open dialogue this afternoon. As you know, stimulus, all of us have heard about the stimulus funds and the ARRA funds, and that happened over a period of 2 years. Illinois received about $21 million. And it really did. At first, it was just so hard and very difficult to deal with regard to all of the stipulations and things that you could and could not do with the money, and there was tons of paper that had to be filed. And for one while, I was just hoping, just give it back. Just please give it back. But we managed to make it, and as a result of that, we had 9 major projects that was forwarded through the Bureau of Blind Services. And I'm not going to talk about all 9 of those projects, but I will mention the ones that I think some of you might be aware of or might even have been involved in. The largest project we had was called GIL 57, and the reason why we named it that is because it was a technology project that was intended to reach individuals who did not live in large metro areas. And as you know, that it's very difficult sometimes to get the services to the people that need them, and particularly when they can't always travel to Chicago or Carbondale or Peoria and some of the other larger cities. So the GIL in Chicago was granted a contract with the Bureau of Blind Services, and through that contract, over a period of 2 years, we served about probably 96 to 98 people total. And the project was, we had 2 weeks of training in technology, and it started out in Decatur, and it went from Decatur to Champaign, Champaign to Carbondale, Carbondale to Mount Vernon. And there was 12 people in each one of the sessions. And the criteria was that the training was rendered to those individuals who were in need of technology training that could give them an advantage in higher education or employment. And some of those individuals also needed to have some touch-up or some advanced training for job retention. And while 2 weeks is not a lot of time, it proved to be ample time for those individuals. And out of those probably 96 to 98 people, we purchased equipment for probably a third of those individuals through the ARRA funds. For some of the individuals who did not get materials or laptops or various different types of software through ARRA, we were able to make those purchases through VR on what we call fee-for-service. And that has been very beneficial. Also, it might be picked up again as a part of our VR funding, because we had so many people who said that they would like to have additional training. And some of those individuals also said that as a result of that, they had decided that they were going to go back to school or they were going to do other things that would advance them more equally toward competitive employment. So we were very pleased with that. We also had projects under the senior program, which we did one in Chicago, which was a 2-week stint for people 55 and older who had non-competitive goals, meaning that they had no interest in returning to work. And I think, Patty, we brought some of our seniors, I know we did, out to O'Hare.
We brought a whole bus.
Right. And they said that that was a great adventure, and they really enjoyed coming. And we used some of the stimulus money to do that. So that was good. And at the end of that training, each one of the individuals left with a kit that was valued at about $300. So it had various different things in it that they could use in their homes and to become more self-sufficient. We also repeated that training in Peoria out of like fat rat time. You know, sometimes it's not always good to be first. So by the time the training had gone to Peoria, which was in the second year, we were balancing our books and realized that we were going to not spend all of the money. So the kids jumped from $300 to $850.
Oh, wow.
So each one of the people that was in the program left with a kit costing $850, because again, we had to eliminate this money. We were not going to lapse a dime. So they left in good shape. So we are really, really hoping that we'll be able to repeat some of these services and using a formula that we get annually from
RSA for the seniors as well as for our VR dollars. I think another thing that I would like to boast about, and I really did push hard for this under the previous administration, I don't think it's going to be as hard to convince Chris now, that technology is really the key to anything that a blind or visually impaired person is going to do that is going to put them, you're going to be dealing with some form of technology. And now more and more, you have to go to school. I mean, I have friends of mine, and everybody's always flashing their smartphones. I really think in a lot of instances, the phone is smarter than the user, because everybody's huddled in the corner saying, well, how do you do this, and how did you download this app, and look at what this does, and, you know, just all kind of things, which I think is very interesting, particularly for blind people. You know, it really is. It's a very exciting time. I sat at the table at lunch with some young kids and some of high school age, and it's just great to be young. It is truly great to be young, and particularly coming in now that we have an understanding. I've always said to anyone who has approached us with regard to attending an NFB school, my philosophy on that is this. It's just very simple. The world that is a one fit for everybody in the world. There is nothing that I know of. I think that I would be very remiss to say that although we have a state facility, and certainly because I'm employed by the state, I have to manage the facility and manage the staff that are cloud. I know that there are individuals who would be better served by attending a National Federation facility. So you don't have to fight with us about that. That is not an issue. You don't have to fight that fight. I always say to people, you don't have to say how terrible Ikerie Wood is to get to go to Colorado. What you have to say is why you want to go to Colorado and justify it in writing, and you can go to Colorado. It's not a big thing. But we will never be able to close our state facility, and I would hope that you men and women and also certainly the National Federation will advocate on our behalf that we can keep our center here in Illinois, because not everybody is going to be able to travel out of state to school. And all of us, I think I heard Patty or someone say this morning, everybody's interests and capabilities are different. There are some people who are not capable or not interested in going out to Colorado. So we want to keep our school here in Illinois. We certainly do invite constructive criticism. I really don't like it when people complain about anything. If you can't give me a solution or at least give me a glimmer of what you think it will take to make it better. And we always welcome, as Patty has said, I found working with her to be a delight. I have had quite a bit of conversation with Bill Reed and others of you, and Lois Montgomery, and some of you that I want BBS to be the best that it can be, because right now it's a reflection on me as bureau chief. So if you can help me make it better, that's what I'm looking for. I have been in rehabilitation in December. December the 14th will be my 40th year. I started off as when the young people was talking, as I was sitting at the table with them, I was reflecting back, because so much of what you hear your mentors say to you is going to be what you're going to be able to look back and see one day when you become a Patty Chan or a Betty Odom Davis, percolated through the rehab field and have thought that some of the older folks were just really off their rockers. But it really does take a lot of tenacity. It takes a lot of guts. It takes a lot of everything to function in the world as a blind person. My son always says to me, Ma, you act like you think you're a punk, because name anywhere you can go in the world. I work in the James R. Thompson Center, and sometime I might be out of the center for a week or to a week and a half because I have obligations in places other than just there. And people will say, I haven't seen you in several days. Where have you been? Or I was wondering about you. Or I asked somebody, what had happened to you? Now, I know out of the thousands and thousands of people that works in the James R. Thompson Center, why do you think they know me? It's the cane. It's the cane. And so all of us are poster children because everybody has been socialized that if you see a person with a white cane, do what? You got to look at them. You have to look at them. People are socialized to do that. They're going to look at you, even if they only look at you for 1 second, make that fall, or to see if you're going to run into something or walk off the curb. Don't even think about the times that they take you across the street when you don't want to go across the street. So all of those kinds of things, yes, all of those kind of things happen. This year, and I'm going to say, and then shortly here, I'm going to stop and let you ask me questions. We spent a little bit over $500,000 this year in vocational rehabilitation. And that money is spent for things like education, adaptive devices. This year in the Business Enterprise Program for the Blind, we did something envious about is we purchased 2 concession stands that are mobile. You know, like if you go to the Taste of Chicago or to the fair, and these things are huge, and you pull them around with a big truck. Mm-hmm. And you let them down, and you can serve everything from a malt to grill burgers to just about everything. They're quite expensive. We're the only state that has done that. We also are the only state in the nation that has now 3 deafblind vending managers, and that's really great, and they're doing quite well in the program. We're looking for things that are emerging trends. B6, when Randolph Shepherd evolved, in that vending was the thing. Now, in Illinois and a few other states, they're talking about privatizing, and vending is not such a good thing. So we have to look for other options and things that are competitive and things that we can do to earn money. And we're always open to your thoughts and ideas as you travel, or even if you just wake up and you've had a dream and you think, oh, that might be well for the BEPB. So we will have that discussion with you also. And finally, the technology. Normally what would happen was with our customers, we would have to, if one of the customers needed technology, and that's almost everybody, I would say probably 95% of the people that we serve in with some sort of technology. And we would do a level 1 assessment or a level 2 assessment, depending on the type of technology that is needed. And we would have to go out, or the counselors would get 3 bids, a minimum of 3 bids, which in some cases, it meant that it would be several weeks before the customers would be in receipt of their equipment. Now what we've done is, again, through the to purchase dollars worth of equipment, it's like having a mini store whereby when equipment or assessments are done, instead of us having to bid out for the equipment, we could just go and order the equipment through the warehouse. Now, that does not mean that we won't have to order some of the specific types of software, but the basic equipment, for the most part, we should be able to manage a lot easier. So I think that's going to be very helpful to us. I don't believe in putting someone in a situation for failure. We hope that when all of our young people return to college, that they step through the door with their equipment, with all of the software that they need, so that there won't be any situation like in the olden days when you would be halfway through the semester and still waiting on trying to get a laptop or whatever it is that you were needing. So we know that that's just setting our students up for failure. So thank you very much, Patty, for inviting me. It's great to have had the opportunity to address you this afternoon.
Now, Betty, I was very concerned, as you know, that one of the things that was done some years ago that related to Centers for Independent Living was that in the specs, and I forget what you call those exactly, but you have specs that you send out to your providers. Mm-hmm. When we were dealing with seniors, it's necessary for a provider to have the ability to teach Braille. I think that that's since been updated. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, and that's why I like to have questions, because I truly forgot that. That was one of the first things that happened, and that was in the memorandum of understanding that we had agreements with probably about 18 centers. So that has been put back in the memorandum of understanding that we are still in the process of amending. Our customers will be able to receive Braille, or if they are not, then we will be readjusting the funding in those contracts, because any amount of Braille is very useful, and everybody knows that not everybody is going to read at a level that they will be transcribers or might even be able to read a book, but certainly Braille is useful to everyone, so we will be having that. And I was just so pleased. That was probably the first thing that
they want. Braille can get it.
Right. Everybody that wants Braille can get it.
Jamal with a question.
We are now told that we have a mic walker. Go ahead, Jamal.
Okay, Ms. Davis.
Yes.
I was having breakfast with an individual this morning, and we were discussing the issue of mobility. And he informed me that the state's mobile O&M budget through rehab has been cut and basically zeroed out. Is this accurate? And if so, for those individuals who go blind and need O&M instruction, what will they do?
Okay. I think that probably because so much has been said about that, that it's just a misunderstanding on the part of your informant. But please take this back and say that we have been providing orientation and mobility services on a fee-for-service basis, meaning that the individuals who have been providing the training are not employed by the state but are working for us on a fee-for-service basis. We are also constantly negotiating to get additional state staff, because orientation and mobility is one of those core skills that is needed by anyone who is blind, and it takes a lot of practice. It takes definitely more practice than once a day, or it takes repeated practice for that. So, yes, I was in a meeting on this Thursday. We do have funds that we are using for orientation, and everybody who needs orientation and mobility, whether or not they live in Chicago, one of the more rural areas, will be able to receive it.
What is the wait time on that?
Well, in Chicago, the wait time is not that long. What the problem is that we have, well, you know, the city of Chicago is the city of Chicago. There are some instructors who refuse to work in the central or in the heart of Chicago, in those areas, what you see on the television. So people are just basically afraid to work in some areas. So the problem is that there needs to be an initiative to recruit more minority O&M specialists or provide scholarships where individuals can come into go to a university and get trained in that field. It's a very lucrative field to be in, because it's not overly crowded and there's a great need for it. So that's the biggest problem we have in the Chicago area and also in East St. Louis, is actually getting someone who is going to work in those areas.
Greg Rosenberg, I'm from Tinley Park.
Hi, Greg.
And basically, I'm going to follow up on Jamal's question, because I was actually the one that made that statement.
Yes.
I was told from several individuals that there was going to be direct budgetary cuts that came out of Quinn's office. Now, I don't have firsthand validation of that, but that's what I was told in any case. But my question to you is, in my region, Region 1, we were told that there's no available O&M instructors. In my case, my vision varies from day to day. Some days I have zero vision. Some days I have light perception. And it's extremely difficult for me to cross streets to get to my train.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was lucky enough that I was able to find someone who's a retired O&M instructor that was willing to help me. But, you know, not everybody's going to have money to be able to pay such a person. And, you know, I was told that, you know, the lighthouse's queue was quite backed up. And I was told that I was on a waiting list, like, from June that might open up in August. And then apparently they lost an instructor. So, I mean, I really don't have sufficient ability to get the O&M training that I need to be able to do what I'm doing. And I guess I'm trying to figure out how we can solve that issue. Obviously, you mentioned there's a shortage of instructors, so that's a factor, but...
But it doesn't affect you, I apologize, in that you should not be having, you don't have to figure out how you're going to pay. That's what Voc Rehab does. We don't, you know, if you're our customer, we pay for your training through, again, those words, fee for service. And a lot of times because there's not a, I will admit, in Region 1, we do not have an OLM instructor or instructors other than at iCree Wood that works in Region 1 other than those individuals that we hire on fee for service. So, Brenda, you're in the audience. Would you make sure that the gentleman gets one of my cards, so then I will contact you personally and talk to you and also put you in touch with someone that can provide that service for you.
I'll give you one of my cards.
Okay.
Other questions? Ryan, go ahead. Wait for a mic, though.
Thank you. By the way, Ms. Davis, this is Ryan Kwok. You might
Hi,
remember
Ryan.
From a program you did with Bill Jurek in 2007.
Oh, okay.
From the time we did that programming until now, you have always maintained that spirit of regardless of what the state says, we are going to give people the services that they think that they tell us that they need as long as they can justify it.
Shh.
And
that was me saying, okay, let's keep it on the down low.
Oh, well, okay. My question being, what are you doing to push people, and what is the administration doing under Chris Smith to push people beyond, you know, obviously you're at the mercy of the state, but they're also people. They're people first. They're not statistics. What are you doing to get them out of their comfort zones and say, yeah, you might want this, but we can provide something a whole lot better and something that might help you holistically as you try to lead a better quality of life?
You know, that's being a blind person myself, and I did not lose my vision until I was about 22, and I had gone to college and thought I had the world in my hands, and needless to say, thought that the status quo was going to get just better. It never occurred to me that I was going to ever be a blind person or a person with a disability. And so I have walked that walk. And I think of all, when I was superintendent of iCree Wood, we always see people that have meltdowns. And that's a part of the course that most of individuals go through, a mourning stage, the denial, the shock, the whole different thing. Why me? And I think of everybody that I've seen, I have only seen one person that was worse than me. I mean, at the time when I lost my vision, they had four psychologists, and I swear every one of them was needed to bring me out of the depression and to do all of that. So lots of times when people come into the facility, believe it or not, they come in early, and they're just in the phase of adjustment, just trying to adapt to the fact that, okay, now I'm in this whole new world. I've got to learn all these whole new skills. I got to walk around with a cane. Then somebody introduces them to a dog guide. And I've seen so many people at that time that can't even begin to think about a vocation or employment or higher education. It may take a while. So, and I don't think that from my own experience that the prodding and the pushing and all of that, it's sometimes instead of it working, it reverses itself. And the person would just go into hate mode. I don't want to see any of those blank people talking about blindness. I don't want to do this. I'm tired of being lost. And then after a while, they turn around and they begin to kind of level off and understand that crying every day, when I wake up, I'm crying all day, but when I stop crying, I'm still blind. So now I've got to make a choice. I mean, I have to make a choice. And it really is up to every individual to find their way back to that. And it does take counseling, it takes sometimes hand-holding, it takes some independence, some tough love. I just don't know if there's any one way to do it, but I do know this, there should be always an open door when that person does find his or her way back to reality. And that's what my philosophy is just to have a beacon of light and to talk to people and to, like I said this morning, it was a breath of fresh air to sit at the table with such young people. You know, their ideas and thoughts are so very different from mine. But it's, I think for us and those of us who work in the industry, those of us who are in school, and to see the young men this morning that travel here all the way from California to address us, you know, I just think coming to conventions like this where you can actually, I think I heard him say when he came to his first convention, and just seeing people that was up and moving and have professions and have lives and children and can laugh and move around in the world, I think all of that is what goes into developing a healthy, holistic blind person.
I'm gonna take one more, but I have one comment. Betty, I think you've hit on something that's really, really key. Exposure to successful, out in the world, blind people who are parents,
yes,
who are married, who are working, who have hobbies, who do X, Y, Z. Just coming to this kind of convention will push people, because if you can do it, I can do it. And I think that the referral process, when you have counselors, should include referrals to the NFB.
Right.
Now, I will take Steve's question, and that's got to be the last one. Now, Betty, you're going to be here this afternoon, though, if people want to find you, right?
If anybody wants to find me, hold your hand. Brenda, would you come and get my purse? My cards are inside of my purse. Okay. I'm sorry. I should have left you with a stat. So that will be my contact information. And if I miss you this afternoon, I was telling Patty earlier that I have a husband who is ill. Otherwise, I would have gotten here yesterday, and I wouldn't have to leave so abruptly today. But I am very pleased that I was able to get here today, and that I'm the boss, so I could ask Brenda to work today. So that's another good thing, because Brenda is also the program director. It's Brenda Alexander is the program director at IQRI Wood. Some of you may know Brenda.
Yep, we do indeed.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to let Steve go forward with his question, and then we'll have to move on. Steve?
Ms. Ellis, if somebody, as long as somebody has the physical capacity to travel, what is the sort of default presumption about orientation and mobility at IQRI? Do you do all the stuff that they did with me, everything like major street crossings and minor street crossings and diagonal streets and railroad grade crossings and L and subway and bus travel and airport concourses and downtown stores, and you really have the whole gamut of travel and you have a big enjoyable experience out of it? Or do you do what some officials have suggested, that visually impaired people need paratransit as a class? I'm retired from the Chicago Transit Authority, and as most of you know, travel is not only my business, but my tremendous pleasure as well. And, it, you know, IVHI at the old place at 1900 South Marshall Boulevard, so I'm being a little historic at this point, gave me a lot of training and a lot of encouragement and a lot of inspiration, and I feel as a blind guy that it's my mission in life to give some of that back and pass it on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, we do the whole gamut of travel, and certainly the amount of travel and to what degree individuals are going to travel is definitely going to depend upon, you know, what their lifestyle is and how they choose to move about. But certainly we try to offer training that is adaptable. So whether or not you are traveling in Chicago or if you're in Carbondale or wherever, most of your skills hopefully are transferable. So we do offer that. There are some people, depending upon, you know, their level of travel and their disabilities, will never be total what we call independent route travelers, and they might need some assistance from paratransit or might travel. You know, when I was young, I thought I had to prove everything to the world. And for the most part, I tried to do that. But now that I'm a senior citizen and at my age, I'm a lot more cautious than I used to be. I don't jump over mountains and do all that stuff anymore because I know that if I fall, I'm more fragile. So, and also now that I can afford to do it, I do drive. I do ride in a lot more cabs. I do hire a lot more drivers. But those are people that I hire. It's not anybody that I think that someone else is hiring someone for me. The state doesn't do that. I do that. So I think as we move through life, we have to adapt. Our lives are based around our experiences and also what is real common sense. And it's been, again, a pleasure, Patty. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming, and give your husband our best. I hope he feels better.
Thank you.
Thank you.